You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
So several years ago, I was diagnosed with two conditions called interstitial cystitis and vulvodynia. And my doctor told me that that meant I was going to have to go for a very long time, possibly forever, without four things. And those four things, tragically, were alcohol, caffeine, pants, and sex. To which I, of course, responded, oh, just those four things? Just the four things that make life vaguely livable. Sure, no problem. So not only did I have to totally change my identity from blue jeans and beer to dresses and chamomile tea, but I also had to deal with the fact that I, at 23 years old, might never be able to have sex again. Essentially, I developed a medical condition that required me to become the person my mother had always wanted me to be. My gynecologist would always try to give me encouraging advice after our appointments, but it always just ended up depressing me more. There's nothing like having a 60-year-old male doctor remind you that there are lots of other ways to have fun besides vaginal penetration. Thanks, doc.
He's Scott Winter.
And she's Stacy Waite. And you just heard Erin Barker reading a piece she performed in April at TEDMED, a multidisciplinary community of innovators and leaders who share a common determination to create a better future in health and medicine. It's an offshoot of TED.com, and Barker performed with her friend and Story Collider podcast partner, Ben Lilly, at the Kennedy Center of Performing Arts in Washington, D.C., where they were supposed to bring a storytelling element to a somewhat egg-heady show.
Today's episode of Air Schooner, however, is not a show about the science of storytelling, which would be cool, but rather, it's about the storytelling of science, because Barker believes in the power of oral storytelling to make anything interesting, including her own medical history.
So let's listen to the rest of Erin Barker's piece from TEDMED.
So I was having a lot of trouble accepting all of this, because all of these things were so intrinsic to my identity and how I represented myself to the world. So for a while, I just kind of pretended nothing had changed. I would still order a beer when I went out. I would just spit it back into the bottle instead of swallowing it, which it turns out is kind of a turnoff for some people. I kept wearing jeans to work, but I would undo them under my desk to make it less painful because no one could tell as long as I was sitting down. And this worked out awesome until one day I, of course, forgot and ended up in the hallway face to face with my boss's boss with my pants hanging wide open. And after a series of similar events like this, I realized I had to make a change. So I started connecting with other sufferers for the first time. I got more honest with myself and my doctor about what I was going through, and I started vaginal physical therapy, which I'll just let you imagine what that entails. But I made a lot of progress, and here I am wearing jeans today with the fly done up and everything. It was crazy. It was the most intense thing I've ever done. We had to get made up and styled and everything before we went on stage. My stylist had previously styled Joe Biden. Joe Biden to me is kind of a step down. And I was like, I was thinking I would just go on stage with a ponytail. And she was just like, no, we're not going to do that. But it was really cool because the audience really responded to storytelling in medicine. And you could tell that after hearing talks all day, of course, many of which were wonderful and insightful, they really just kind of wanted to hear a story. no matter who you are, even if you're like a CEO of a health insurance company, you still kind of want to hear a story.
Barker, originally from suburban Cincinnati, Ohio, migrated to New York after college, where she edited other people's writing for money in cubicles. But she'd been a writer in school, and she missed the creative life. Scott talked to her about that first show.
Well, I started telling stories on stage, I think about 4 years ago. And I did it because I had a very boring job at the time, and I really wanted to do something creative. And then also I had really paralyzing stage fright and fear of public speaking. And I thought maybe I could confront that. And so I did, and I broke out in hives the first time I went on stage. But, you know, I didn't die when I was up there like I'd always expected I would. And so it gave me kind of a feeling of invincibility that I still have every time I do it.
Once Barker started, she couldn't stop, and she found success pretty quickly. She loved the Moth Theater most because she sees it as a catalyst for a growing performance storytelling scene in New York, almost a movement.
The Moth holds slam storytelling events weekly in New York City, 3 times a month in L.A., 2 times a month in Chicago and Michigan, and monthly in towns like Louisville, Pittsburgh, Boston, Milwaukee, Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, and Minneapolis, St. Paul. And after 10 slams across the country, winners face off in a Grand Slam championship back in New York.
So she won the Grand Slam championships and got to travel with the Moth. And then she found an opportunity that would turn storytelling into a lifestyle. And she never dreamed that would happen in the world of beakers and petri dishes.
Story Collider was founded, we're about to celebrate our 3-year anniversary, actually. It was founded 3 years ago by two physicists, Ben Lilly and Brian Wecht. And about a year into it, they decided they would like someone who wasn't a theoretical high particle physicist to be involved. And so they asked me to do it. When they had initially started the show, the purpose of which is to share personal stories about science with the goal of creating a personal connection for the general public with science. When they first started it, I thought it was a terrible idea for a show. I thought it sounded like the most boring thing ever. This coming from someone who, I think the only science class I took in college was titled Plants and People. So I thought it was a terrible idea. I was like, oh, I feel bad for those guys and their terrible show. I better go sometime and throw them a bone. And so I went, and it was a packed house, and it was amazing. And the stories were crazy intense because science, there's so much drama in science that you don't think about. I think that really there are so many people who are interested in science or would be interested in science, but they haven't found the right way in. And I kind of went overnight from thinking, oh, this is a terrible idea for a show, I feel bad for these guys, to being like, how can I get in on this?
So what does a storyteller who knows nothing about science do on a science podcast like Story Collider? Well, she changes the theoretical high particle physicists from lab coat wearers and lab report writers into humans.
I work with our storytellers to develop their stories for our show. And this means a lot of the times I'm working with scientists about how to talk about their work and how to tell stories about their science. What comes out of that are personal stories, not necessarily about science even. I don't know if that's the right way to say it. There are stories that are about the same things that all stories are about, you know, love, ambition, depression, disappointment. But science is always the catalyst that set things in motion. And I think, honestly, I've accidentally learned a lot about science. I will say the number one issue that we have when we work with scientists is that they will say, well, no one's interested in my personal life or my thoughts or my feelings. They only want to hear about my work. And they only want to talk about, you know, microscopes and petri dishes and things of that nature. And we have to dig for a while before we find something that's really huge. And it's strange that it never occurred to them. But the thing about scientists is they're trained to really not talk about themselves. And when they write their lab reports, they're actually not allowed to use I. They have to write it all in passive voice. I think one of our recent shows, we worked with a neuroscientist, Paula Croxon, and she told us about her work and everything. And then eventually, after we talked about it for a while, we came around to the fact that there was this huge connection between her work and her relationship with her grandmother, who had suffered from Alzheimer's. And the relationship had been very troubled near the end when her grandmother started to forget who she was. And it took us a long time to find that, which was the crazy thing, because it was such a powerful story and it was such the obvious route to go.
That scientist again was Paula Croxon, a neuroscientist at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, where she studies memory, particularly complex autobiographical memories. Croxon is originally from the UK, where she received an MA in natural sciences from the University of Cambridge and a PhD in neuroscience from the University of Oxford.
Croxon also plays the flute, and she blogs for Psychology Today. And on Story Collider, as Barker alluded to earlier, Croxon tells funny stories about her kind of mad and crazy grandmother who would pick roses from others' yards and break into closed parks. Really one of Croxon's favorite people on Earth. But then Croxon tells this story about how things began to change, which she eventually links to her own neuroscience research.
I don't really remember when things started to change, but I must have been quite young, because my sister, who's 2.5 years younger than me, doesn't remember that person at all, the person I think of as the real grandma. One incident in particular sticks in my memory. I mean, there were little things. She would, like, you know, put the kettle on and forget that she'd done that. Actually, I do that. She would get her names mixed up. She'd make sandwiches without the filling. And, you know, we kind of laughed this off, and my mom said, "Oh, you're going a bit senile." But then a couple of years later, when I was in my teens, we went down for a visit, and we were sitting in the front room. And the front room was just for visitors. It had all the nice furniture, and it was a little dusty. And we were visitors, so we were sitting in there. My sister and I were sitting on one of the sofas, and she was perched on one of the armchairs there, very sort of upright. And we were having a lovely conversation, and she stopped mid-conversation. She looks at us. She says, "You're nice girls. Who are you here with?" I was like, "Who am I here with?" I said, "We're your granddaughters. We're here with your daughter. We're visiting. We come every year." This sort of struck a chord with her. So she said, "Oh, my granddaughters. Oh, they're such lovely girls." She started to tell us about ourselves. She got a picture off the mantelpiece. It was one of my favorites. It was taken a few years ago when we were a bit younger, and my sister and I looked like twins in it. And she started telling us, you know, how much we like to dress alike and, you know, what we like to do. And, you know, this whole experience was like an out-of-body experience for me. I was about 14 years old, and I was in a room, and I had no idea who I was. And I wrote in my diary later, I was 14, so I had a diary, "I have no idea who I am anymore." Kind of dawned on me later that she had lost a chunk of her memory. And she knew she had granddaughters, and she remembered having granddaughters who were little kids, but she had lost all of the time during which we grew up into teenagers.
Wow, Scott, that moment in the story where the grandmother starts to tell them about themselves, it's a really fascinating moment because we don't usually get to be there when other people are telling other people about us.
Yeah, Stacey, you could really tell that Erin had helped her scientist find a moment and find some characters, including memory as a character. And again, you can find the rest of Paula Croxon's episode of Story Collider at storycollider.org or on iTunes. And if you're in Brooklyn May 14th, you should show up to the 3rd anniversary live show at the Bell House.
And look for Erin Barker's Grand Slam winning story on themoth.org and in the Moth Anthology next fall. Thanks for listening to Air Schooner.
Air Schooner is a biweekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Eric Jones and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.